All right, I think we're going to call our meeting to order. And we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I will lead that. Please join me in a pledge to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes,
here. And Councilmember Fonzie is absent tonight.
Yes. So four of us here. Yes, we miss Councilmember Fonzie this evening. We'll look forward to seeing her soon. Approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion?
So move.
I'll second.
First by Councilmember Funk, second by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All right. We have no presentations this evening. Now we'll move on to the consent calendar. The consent calendar is considered to contain items that are routine in nature and that we can generally just vote in one fell swoop. That is, unless anyone from the council is wishing to pull an item or anyone from the public. Is there anyone from council? Seeing none, anyone from the public wishing to pull a consent calendar item? Seeing none, I'll ask for a motion.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
First by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All right, updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. I have a lot of good downtown business news. I want to start with Colony Market in Delhi. So this new market in Delhi at the corner of Traffic Way in El Camino and the former Texaco gas station is nearly ready to open. I know we've all been watching all the work with excitement. So new signs have been installed and interior improvements are quickly progressing. The interior design incorporates reclaimed wood and rustic barn-like finishes, which complement the former gas station design. And their opening date is expected to be later this month, so that's going to be exciting news for all of us. I know we're looking forward to having them here in town. We're also looking forward to Slodoco. So we're all very excited about the new donut shop coming to town, located at Colony Square near Galaxy Theater, which should be open by the end of the month. Work is underway on an outside patio cover, and this space will become a great addition to Colony Square. In addition to incredible donuts, it's a great place to be, gathering space, Wi-Fi. I hear their coffee's incredible. We're excited to have them here, although I think a lot of us here at City Hall are a little worried about our waistlines and having Slodoco so close. And speaking of our waistlines, we also have Malibu Brew. So Malibu Brew continues work at their new location at the Century 21 building right up the street from us here on East Mall. The owners of the business are working on a deck in front of the new space, which will accommodate outdoor dining facing the sunken gardens. And the new coffee shop will also be complemented by Doc Bernstein's ice cream. And we're going to have Jamba Juice here in town. We recently issued construction permits for the vacant site at the corner of El Camino Real and Highway 41, situated next to Rabobank, and the project has now officially broken ground. I think we've seen them doing work here for the last week out there, and we know that one of the tenants with the signed lease for the location is Jamba Juice, so they are also coming. So a lot of great new restaurants, facilities, gathering spaces coming here in the downtown. We also have a lot of exciting things going on at the zoo, so mark your calendars. First, Spring Festival at the Charles Paddock Zoo runs from April 13th through 28th. So come to the zoo to see lots of furs and feathers for a limited time, including everybody's springtime favorite, the adorable baby chicks. And the Spring Festival is included with your general admission to the zoo. We have Party for the Planet. It's a great day of education, conservation, and fun for all ages. It will be held on Saturday, April 13th from 10 to 3 p.m. to kick off the Spring Festival at the Zoo. And one of my favorites, the 5th Annual Brew at the Zoo, Saturday, April 27th from 5:30 to 9 p.m. Tickets include a commemorative beer glass, craft beer distilleries, wine, cider tasting, and live music. Pre-sale tickets are $35 tickets, and they'll be $40 at the door. You must be 21 years of age and over, so we are not allowing anybody under 21, even if they promise not to drink, in the zoo. You must be 21 or older, and tickets are on sale now. The Thelma Vetter Red Panda Experience is open and available, so that will be open at all of these events, including any visit that you have to the zoo. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions of the city manager? I have to say, when we were at the Red Panda exhibit, Charles said to me, and I hope this sounds good, but he said, look at the Red Panda. That's stuffed animal quality. Not that we want to have that, but you know what I mean? Like, you look at them, they're just so cute and cuddly. That was fantastic. Thank you. Next on the agenda is our community forum. This is reserved for persons wishing to address the council on something that is not on our agenda this evening, but over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we have turned on the timer so that you will be alerted to when your time is up. Please state your name for the record before making any comments, and know that comments made during community forum will not be a subject of discussion. A maximum of 30 minutes will be allowed for community forum unless changed by the council. Any members of the public who have questions or need information can contact the city clerk's office between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. at 470-3400 or cityclerk@atascadero.org. So our first speaker. Good evening, sir. I think we need to turn on your mic.
Madam Mayor and esteemed council members, my name is Dan Feldman, and I'm the community liaison for Atheists United San Luis Obispo. AU SLO is a vibrant and active community organization with over 600 members all over San Luis Obispo County. One of AU SLO's missions is to advocate for the separation of church and state enshrined in our Constitution. Please remember that non-believers live right here in Atascadero, working, raising families, paying taxes, and voting. We are grateful for our secular government, which was strengthened 71 years ago on March 8, 1948, when the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision, McCollum versus Board of Education, barring religious instruction in public schools, was handed down with a vote of 8-1. The dramatic case was brought by Vashti McCollum, a mother in Champaign, Illinois, on behalf of her son, Jim. Jim was punished by teachers and teased by students for not taking part in the religious instruction illegally taught in his public school. Although she lost at the first two court levels, Vashti did not give up. Her appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court resulted in a stunning victory for separation of church and state, which is still the prevailing precedent in public school law today. Justice Frankfurter wrote in his concurrence, and I quote, "Separation means separation, not something less. Jefferson's metaphor in describing the relation between church and state speaks of a wall of separation, not a fine line easily overstepped. The public school is at once the symbol of our democracy and the most pervasive means for promoting our common destiny. In no activity of the state is it more vital to keep out divisive forces than it is in its schools to avoid confusing, not to say fusing, what the Constitution sought to keep strictly apart. The great American principle of eternal separation, Elihu Root's phrase bears repetition. It is one of the vital reliances of our constitutional system for assuring unities among our people, stronger than our diversities. It is the court's duty to enforce this principle in its full integrity." Close quote. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker, anyone else looking to speak at public comment? And you can go get lined up, feel free to. No need to wait.
Good evening, council members.
Good evening.
My name is Fred Fillmore, and I would like to try to bring up somewhere in the future about the problem they're having on El Centro Road with the excess water flow that has been increasing and destroying some frontal properties in roads, and it's not a city dedicated street, so with the extra water, if it erodes the streets and stuff, we have to pay for it, and most of us are retired on that street, so we do get a lot of water from the west side of El Camino and some other bubble drains that pop up and stuff, and we need to try to come out with a better solution instead of a big drainage ditch that washes out here, gullies there, and washing out the road. So if we could somewhere down the road get it on the calendar or discuss it some way, shape, or form, I'd appreciate it. I'm speaking for the neighbors on El Centro Road. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wishing to address the council?
My name is Kim, and I live on Mercedes Avenue. And I am here to give a report of the last time I came to the meeting was a month ago, and just to kind of give an update. So I'm here because our little street, which is Mercedes Avenue, is about the same size as East Mall, which is this main street that goes to the junior high. And it is currently has a speed limit of 55 miles an hour. I have been talking to the city and to the chief regarding this issue, and so far at this time, not a whole lot of resolve, a lot of just issues that are in the way. So the average speed is not really the issue, it's more of what the potential of what the speed could be set at is what the issue is. We have over, when it's a busy time, over 260 cars that zoom by our house on a daily basis, an hour. And it's really busy, and we're trying really hard to get some protection for our street, and it just has not happened. The police can't give a ticket for speeding because there is no speed limit. So they can go as fast as they want from 55 down, and I kid you not, it makes it really scary. It has been that way since the bridge went through 10 years ago. Mercedes Avenue was actually where 41 goes up and around. It actually was a longer street. And so our street is now not classified as a residential district because it is too short to have protection of a residential district, which is crazy. How can a street be too short to get protection of a 55 mile an hour zone down to a 25 or something that is reasonable? So that's why I am here today, just really wanting help with our street. It's not safe to walk on. It's scary for people to walk on. We see people hugging the road, and it's just really scary, and we're reaching out as nicely and as loudly as we possibly can to please help our street get some protection from the speeding, either having the law to be able to help slow people down or speed limit or something. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to address the council this evening? All right, seeing none, I will close community forum and bring it back to council and staff. I believe the issue on El Centro, and this is probably something good for most residents to know. What most people don't know is if you own property, you actually are responsible for up to the street on your property. So when it comes to drainage and things like that, that just is the responsibility. Oh, my time's up. Of the property owners. And so I know that staff has been working with the folks on El Centro, and I would encourage you to keep working with them and see what are the options that you have to be taking care of that. I think that's really the best thing to move forward with. Regarding Mercedes Avenue, I do understand there's a speed survey being done. I also know I live on a street where there are no sidewalks, and it's one lane each way, and it is walker beware if you're gonna walk, and that's how a lot of our streets are in Atascadero. We're sort of rural, and we've got some of those small windy roads, and so a lot of us know that, you know, we just don't walk on those roads, and I don't know that there's anything to be done about that per se, but I do understand there's a speed survey being done. Am I correct on that, or have I stated that correctly, Chief?
Yeah, speed survey will be done sometime this summer in conjunction with the bridge replacement that's going to go on. In order for speed limits to be set and enforced on a street, we do need a speed survey, and so that's going to happen in conjunction already. And so it will take a little time, but that's something that's being worked on. The difficulty in that is that oftentimes speed surveys set speed limits higher than what residents would actually like to see on their street. And barring some other ability within the law to change that, we're pretty much restricted to what the speed survey shows. So oftentimes we find that despite what the residents want, those speed surveys actually increase the speed limit a little bit from what we'd like to see it set.
Okay.
As long as there's no accident history on that roadway to show that there's some preclusion from that, it's pretty much what has to be set at. So we'll wait. We'll see what that result comes out to be, and then we'll kind of make some decisions and go from there.
Okay. Thank you. And just ask the city manager if there's anything that you would add to that, or have we covered it?
I think you covered it well. I know that staff has been working with these two residents and will continue to do so.
Thank you for that. And thank you for coming this evening. All right. We are on to, let's see, I get to move my pages around. No public hearings. We're on to our management report, and this will be Director Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Just wait for a moment. We'll have a little presentation on the screen there for you in just a second here too. But what we'd like to introduce tonight is it's a request for an authorization to process a general plan amendment for a residential property out on Atascadero Avenue. That's at 10080 Atascadero Avenue. And this is a process that we allow citizens to do before we get into the full analysis and full research of a general plan amendment. We'd like to run it by the council to see, is this something that staff should be working on? Does this achieve our city goals towards, you know, where we're going with the city and accomplish what we want to have for a successful community and for our general plan to be implemented properly? Now, state law only allows cities to amend their general plan several times each year. Our particular code sets up two specific dates for that to happen. That's in March and September. Thank you. I've got Callie Taylor here to my right. She's our senior planner, and she's going to provide some details on this specific request. But just as a reminder tonight, we're not taking any action on this request or saying whether this particular item is a really good idea or a bad idea, because we haven't done all that research. All we're doing is saying, is this something that we can accommodate for staffing right now? Is this the right time to look at this, or should we put this off? So I'm going to leave you, before I hand this over to Callie to give you some details on the property and the project itself, really what we're going to be asking is a couple different potential alternative recommendations. One is, do we look at this particular item now, which would put it in the probably September timeframe of this year, or should we put this off for a future general plan update of the entire city 2 to 3 years from now? Or is this not a good idea at all? So that's kind of where we're going to leave it tonight, but I'm going to have Callie Taylor, our senior planner, give you some details on this project, and both of us can answer your questions and proceed from there.
Director, I would just ask one thing. Sure. Callie has a fire placard in front of her name, so if anyone's watching on TV and they tune in, I don't want them to think she's...
To my right is not the fire chief, but it
right.
Really is Callie Taylor,
yeah.
Our senior planner.
Thank you.
I'm just
thinking, again, if someone tunes in,
correct.
They're going to look and see fire.
Good call.
So, okay,
thank
thanks.
You.
All right, so tonight the application number that we're looking at is a pre-application. We actually haven't accepted an official application on this yet. No fees have been submitted by the applicant yet. This project, or potential project, is located at 10080 Atascadero Avenue. So we're just a few properties down from the intersection of San Gabriel Road and Atascadero Avenue. The property is unique because it lies at the interface of two different zoning districts. So it's in the residential suburban zone, which is our large lot residential zoning district. It's a 2.5 to 10 acre minimum, and it's right next door to an RSFY zone, which is a 1 acre minimum lot size. So the applicant has submitted the request to change the zoning of their property to that smaller lot size to allow 1 acre lots in this property. The application request today, if it was authorized to move forward, would go along with a tentative parcel map. So a parcel map would split the lot into four separate one-acre parcels, and that there would be a flag lot with that as well. Council policy does require this council review and authorization prior to us accepting the application. Council is not taking action or approving anything tonight. You're only deciding if the city can accept this. Here, this is an aerial photo. It's a few years old. This property actually used to be used as the bee farm here in Atascadero, so you can see a lot of those bee boxes back there on the property. It does have one single-family house on it and several accessory structures. It's been developed for quite some years, so there's a number of these accessory structures on the property. These are some photos of the existing residence and the existing detached garage. And this is a concept of the parcel map that might come forward if the council authorizes the zone change. So this is just a preliminary application. The official application would be submitted in accordance with our parcel map requirements, and it would be done by a surveyor. One of the things that council would be considering tonight is also moving the urban services line boundary. So the USL line, is what we kind of refer to that often, is where we see kind of higher level of services if you're within the urban services line. The main difference there is sewer service. So properties within the urban services line typically are able to connect to sewer. This map, the pink properties are all the properties that are already connected to sewer, and the green and yellow ones are just showing you the underlying zoning. Those are properties that are not connected. They would all be on septic systems or just undeveloped. The existing sewer line here is actually located in the road right in front of the property that we're talking about, 10080 Atascadero Avenue. So when the last general plan update was done and the sewer was located on Atascadero Avenue, they actually put manholes on each side of this property and a sewer line in the street. It does make this property kind of unique when we're looking at the larger neighborhood. These are some photos looking, the top one is looking south on Atascadero Avenue, so towards the larger lots, and then the bottom picture is looking north on Atascadero Avenue towards the smaller one-acre zone lots. So what's unique here is that as you go further south on Atascadero Avenue, there's a lot more slope on the road. It makes it more difficult to connect to sewer because then we're starting to look at pump line, or not a gravity main, but a more of a forced main with pumps further south. So this property, being that there's already sewer there and our wastewater treatment plant staff has said that it wouldn't be a problem to connect this property. It kind of makes it unique compared to the rest of the properties on the street. So this is our analysis that we go through when we're working with wastewater staff is really to look at that gravity main versus pressurized main, and the wastewater staff feels that this property won't be a problem to serve. There has been interest from the larger neighborhood. We have received several calls from other property owners interested in upzoning their property to get these smaller lots. But without further analysis, we don't know if a larger neighborhood would, in fact, be able to be served by the sewer. So tonight, the council is deciding if you would like to accept this general plan application for processing. And this is part of the council's policy that we go through this process. The first step for the applicant, if you decided to move it forward, would be to do a neighborhood meeting. And that's a neighborhood meeting held by the applicant to try and address any issues or concerns of the neighborhood. The second step would be to have a study session, and this is typically a joint City Council and Planning Commission study session. This is probably more of a minor general plan amendment compared to some of the other ones that we've seen. It's not a very large tract map or neighborhood, so we could do this kind of as a joint neighborhood meeting or City Council Planning Commission study session, or have something in one of the conference rooms downstairs. It doesn't have to necessarily be like the level you saw at Eagle Branch. The Atascadero General Plan does have those designated dates. March and September are when the council can consider general plan amendment requests submitted by private parties. And one of the other things for council to consider is the fiscal impact of adding this additional residential development. And what the council policy has been is to have discretionary projects annexed into the community facilities district. And that's a supplemental tax on these properties in order to make up the difference between what the taxes would pay and what it costs the city to serve additional homes. So that would be something that the city, the council would be considering if this moved forward, would be if it should annex into the CFD. One of the things to consider is just the staff time associated with working on a general plan amendment. There are a number of council priority projects in process right now. One of the ways to simplify the processing times on this would be to process the general plan amendment and the parcel map together. That concurrent processing would shorten the total time to process this project. So tonight, staff has two options that we are recommending. Either the council authorize the processing of the general plan amendment for further review and analysis, so we would accept the application and bring the project through the process, or table the request of the general plan amendment until the city does a comprehensive general plan update. There are some other options. You can send it back to staff for further analysis, and then we'll bring it back to City Council to consider authorizing once we've done the additional research, if you would like additional research to be done. Another option would be to add additional parcels to the area, so look at a larger neighborhood and see if any of the other parcels would be a good candidate for rezoning. And the third option would be if the council determined that the amendment is not appropriate at this time or in the immediate future and could suggest that staff not process the application. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you, Callie. Very good presentation. So just to be clear tonight, what we're deciding is whether or not to take the application. We're not going to be deciding about the community facilities district. We're not going to be deciding about traffic. Can it hook up to sewer? All of these things. So kind of this information is just for us to know, like, here's kind of what it entails, and for all of you to know what it entails, so that if we do go forward with this, you'll know what's going to be looked at and then what we'll be asking for public input regarding. But tonight the decision is, do we move forward with taking a look at all of this? We don't hash into all of that. So just to start with that preface, let's come to any council questions that we might have. Let's start with Councilmember Funk, followed by Councilmember Newsom.
Yes, and Madam Mayor, my first question is for you. Is this the appropriate time to disclose ex parte communications?
Well, actually, so Mr. City Attorney, I think on management reports we don't have to, but we could certainly disclose ex parte. Is that correct?
Yes.
And we kind of tend to go towards that over disclosure anyway. So while we're not legally required for ex parte on a management report, certainly let's go ahead and do that.
So I'll just note that I had a discussion on Saturday with Jan Parker, who is the owner of a neighboring property.
Okay, thank you. And I will say I did speak with the applicant, Mr. Cleveland, yesterday.
I spoke with and met the applicant at his property and toured the property.
I did not speak with the applicant.
Thank you. So questions, and did you have questions?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I have a few here. First of all, since the option is to either process this as a general plan amendment or ask the property owner to wait until the next general plan update, could the staff give us their very best guess at this point as to when the next general plan update might start and be completed?
We project starting that in about 2021. A lot of that is based on, can we get the funding, can we get a grant to move forward, do we have staff time to do that? That's what our projection is right now. And typically a general plan amendment of citywide magnitude is going to take you a minimum of 2 years. And it does involve a full environmental impact report. It involves a lot of fiscal analysis. And also usually it involves updating the circulation element of the general plan and a lot of public outreach. We want everyone to talk about it. So it's a big process, one that a lot of community development directors don't survive. But we hope to start that in a couple of years. That's the idea.
Okay. So we would be asked, the homeowner would be waiting until about 2023 if this is not pursued through amendment.
That sounds about accurate.
Okay. At the point at which the application is considered, will issues with regard to traffic in the neighborhood be considered?
Certainly. With the general plan amendment, we have to do an environmental analysis. We have to do an initial study of environmental review. So we have to look at trips. We have to look at circulation. We have to look at all of the on-site and off-site potential impacts of adding three more lots to this property and all the things that go along with that.
Okay. Consideration of this application by itself as a general plan amendment, and if that is approved, would that preclude options for other people in the area who might be interested in, you'd mentioned that there were some who were interested in subdividing. Would it preclude others from taking this same step if this one is approved as a one-off independently?
Not necessarily. I think anybody's open to coming to the city and asking the question, can we process an amendment? And I think before we do that, we have a discussion, hey, is this even logical? Could this even work? But, in this particular case, it's a rare case where it kind of does seem a little logical on some aspects. So that's why we're, even gotten to this spot. But could it preclude them? Probably not. Our preference, though, is to look at an entire neighborhood, look at the entire community, look at everything at once, rather than piecemeal, gradually patchwork your way through amendments. Mm-hmm. That gets messy. It's best to comprehensively look at things and look at large sections. In this particular case, a lot of the physical issues make sense for this one parcel. It might not make sense for a parcel two parcels away. But again, we haven't done that level of analysis at this point in time.
Two more questions. Sorry, a lot. This is my first dealing with the general plan amendment. In the course of dealing with this, is consideration been given or will it be given to the management of a seasonal creek that the neighbor reported to me is on the property to make sure that the drainage from that can be handled appropriately as the lot is subdivided?
Absolutely. So when we get into the details of the property, we have to answer those questions. So the environmental checklist is going to have us answer all of these questions, not about only just creeks, but also biology, potentially archaeology. We have to answer all those questions. So we have to analyze the site. When you've got a site that's 4 or 5 acres, I don't know of any site in our city, actually, of this size that doesn't have a seasonal drainage on it. Yeah, you all do. So... But our first question is it really a creek? Is it a waterway like Atascadero Creek? Probably not. But it probably is a drainage. Does that drainage have habitat? Does it have issues? We ask all those questions, and those are things we're going to have to further explore. As it stands right now, we don't see anything like that on this particular property that's come up in our information database. But, again, takes a closer look.
Okay. And then last, if this is considered... as a one-off for this, something that's basically for the benefit of this property owner without direct benefits to the city objectives or other things, is there a way potentially for that to be done so that it creates some value for other property owners in the area?
I'm not really sure how to answer that question specifically. I mean, the sewer already exists in the front of this site, and in this particular district, we don't require curb, gutter, sidewalks, or significant off-site improvements. So, if, for example, the sewer stopped at the property prior to this, and this project was going to extend that sewer down to this area, that would provide benefits to adjacent properties. Mm-hmm. It's already there.
Yeah.
That's the one big improvement that we normally require with this kind of a thing. Other than the fact that you might, if it gets done, you ultimately might see three or four new homes on this property, which is going to contribute to property values in the area. And provision of utilities on this particular property and some things like that. But really, it's not a significant change, positive or negative, along those lines.
Okay. Thank you for your patience with the questions.
Councilmember Newsom, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
So my question would be, if the application is accepted, what is the estimated impact on staff time and resources?
I think we have a lot going on right now. We've got a pretty limited staff. We're really trying to work forward with some big plans in the city, such as the Del Rio specific plan, our El Camino plan, our housing element, some of the big downtown projects that are moving forward, and then gearing up for, in the near future, you know, our general plan update and all these things happening. And the fact is that our current workload right now are just our current development projects that are happening. There's a lot of them, and the economy's still going really good, so it's kind of it's pushing us there pretty hard. There's some impact. You know, this kind of a project could take 150 hours or so of staff time because of the community meeting and several staff reports and the environmental analysis, and it goes through several different hands. But it's something, again, if the council decides we should be processing this, it can be put in line in terms of priority, considering that these other projects are happening, and we can start that process in September. So that's an option. It's not overwhelmingly significant. As Callie was mentioning earlier in her presentation, this is not an Eagle Ranch type proposal. It's pretty similar magnitude to a lot of smaller residential projects that we currently process. The only difference here is it does come along with that general plan amendment, which does require, again, for it to come back to council, requires planning commission, requires some community outreach and a community meeting. Those are the things that take a little bit of time.
With our existing projects in place, do you feel that this project meets our goals that we set?
It doesn't move us forward to really enrich those particular goals about economic development and enhancing quality of the city. It's going to get us a couple more houses on this property. That's a good thing. In terms of housing element numbers, it's really not substantial. It's really more satisfying the private property owner's needs and probably doing what we might do anyway in the future general plan citywide amendment, because this property is generally flat and the sewer's in the street and its neighborhood compatibility. In other words, the properties across the street are similar in scale to what this property owner wants. So if we were to look at this in a larger city scale, this kind of makes sense. But does it move us forward as a community to where we're looking to go? The Del Rio specific plan certainly does. The El Camino plan hopefully will. Mm-hmm. Some of our downtown revitalization projects certainly do. Our housing element is something we have to do. I think if I was given that question and I said on a scale of 1 to 10, where does it get us there? Probably like around a 4 is what I could throw out there. So that's where it fits in the top 10 of things that are important for us to do as a community.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. In terms of the time, you mentioned 150 to 200 hours, or maybe I heard the 200 somewhere else. But you talked about, it's preferable to look at more than a single property. If you were to look at additional properties, would that increase substantially that amount of time?
It could increase it because you're bringing in a greater number of people. You're bringing in a greater number of issues. Possibly you're dealing with trees or slope. This property is pretty fortunate. It doesn't have a lot of slope, doesn't have a lot of trees. Other properties surrounding it might. And so the more you bring into it, the more issues you have. And are those folks even willing to come into it? And then you're talking about some elevation issues on Atascadero Avenue, which could necessitate a sewer lift station, on and on and on. I mean, just from a real quick cursory review, this seems like the logical end of that boundary, and that pushing the boundary further out is going to be much more substantive in physical changes or review, and then we get into maybe being less compatible with that surrounding neighborhood as you head to the south and as you head to the west. It's really, you know, getting into that rural area.
Right. Well, that's why I wonder, because on the one hand, you don't want to do these on a one-off basis.
No.
But on the other hand, this one is sort of discreet, and adding more might complicate it. My other question would be, as you look around the city in terms of the council potentially establishing a precedent of taking a one, you know, a one property at a time general plan amendment, which is, generally speaking, not what the general plan is about. But around the city, are there many properties in the residential suburban zone that would kind of fit this mold, where they're a sewer line is nearby, you know, they, of course, border another higher density zone, that sort of thing? Or is this a very unusual situation in the city?
I would call this somewhat unusual, but now that you ask that question, there's a lot of other properties along El Camino Real, north of the downtown, between San Anselmo and Del Rio, where this same zoning, this rural residential zoning, large lot zoning exists, but those properties are served by sewer and along an arterial road and across the street from high-density commercial properties. That's an area that we're probably going to focus on a lot with our next citywide general plan update. So that's a whole different ball of wax, but when you're talking about a residential neighborhood in this small-scale sort of situation, this is an anomaly. So it's unique in that particular nature where, you know, its change of zoning is not, it doesn't seem like it's monumental, it's not going to create monumental change, and it sort of has a physical, logical resolution
to it.
Well,
that's kind of why I ask, because, I mean, it seems sort of logical, but I think we're very concerned about setting a precedent, and
yes.
I'm wondering, the properties you describe on north, you know, farther north on El Camino Real, that might sort of fit this same situation, that if we said, well, we'll take this, would that invite, you know, those kind of property owners to say, well, hey, I'd like to do that too on a one-off?
It's possible, but on those other properties, there's a much different thing that could happen there, and I think preserving that for a much bigger look is critical, because we're long, like I said, we're long an arterial across from commercial. Maybe there's commercial uses that could go there. Maybe there's much higher density uses that could go there to accommodate the needs of our housing element. It's a much different thing. In this location, we're never going to see commercial, and you're never going to see high density, because you would never find that to be compatible with this area. And I don't think any of those neighbors would be very happy with us out there. So,
okay. Another thing. In terms of the time frame you talked about, that's quite a bit of staff time, and staff time doesn't come cheap, let alone pushing aside other priorities. Yeah. What's the fee? It's got to be a pretty substantial fee charged to the applicant.
What is the fee? Callie, can you tell me what those fees are? I mean, there's an environmental review document, there's a general plan amendment request, there's a subdivision request. These are three separate applications that have to come in on this application. But maybe Callie can give us a quick idea, and maybe hopefully she's talked to the applicant about those fees, and they're not going to have a sticker shock when we announce the number right now.
Yes, we did go over the fees, and there are several applications. I think it's close to $15,000 for all of the applications combined.
Right. I would have guessed that, or possibly even a little more. Got it. All right. I think that's it for now. Thank you.
Director, one of the options you have in here is that we could allow staff to take the application and now and process it as time allows. How would you see that happening? Because I kind of doubt that your planning staff is ever sitting around going, gosh, I wonder what I should do now. So is that really realistic to say we could take it in and do it as it comes, or would we really have to prioritize it at some point? Otherwise, it's going to be when the general plan update comes 2 to 5 years down the line.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, we have a limited staff. We've got a lot of projects on our plate, and it's, you know, I'm looking at some potential staffing changes. I hope I don't lose a staff person here soon. So part of that relies on what's going to happen with the current development. In other words, the building permits that are coming in and the construction projects are coming in. Sometimes that's cycles. Right now it's in a high cycle. It's been that way for 3 years now. And we have these bigger, long-range efforts we want to do to really enhance the community and encourage economic development and do those sorts of things. So, and some of those long-range projects are going to take us through the rest of this year. That's a tough question to answer. I mean, I would say that, you know, it's possible we could get to it by the September cycle, but we're likely to be reporting out to you at that point in time on the El Camino plan and starting to work on the housing element, and hopefully by that time we'll have gotten some consensus on the Del Rio specific plan. And there's a pretty big application coming in on that property, by the way, too, on the west side that we're just about to entertain. In fact, we're meeting with those folks next week. So it's looking like the workload's going to keep going pretty full steam ahead. I mean, it's possible we could get to it by the September cycle. I hate to really just
guarantee that. Well, but even September cycle aside, what this says is allow staff to take an application now and process as time allows. So what did that mean? Maybe I'm misinterpreting that. Because the way I interpreted that is it would kind of sit there, and if somebody had a spare half hour, they'd say, oh, let me take a look at that while I'm waiting for this. Maybe that's really not how it works, because it seems to me that somebody would actually have to prioritize that, because I don't think we're sitting around with unused time.
We do. It's a little it's a little more specific than that, because we do have the Permit Streamlining Act. We do have to respond to applicants within 30 days and deem the application complete and move forward and have collaboration and start setting these dates. But we can put off the hearing date, and we can put off the staff report production date. We just have to communicate those issues very clearly in writing to the applicant, and we have to start the work on the application. But the meat of that application, the hearings and the public outreach, we can set that time whenever we wanted to. So we could. I mean, then again, does the applicant want to pay that kind of money and then just potentially sit for 6 or 8 months? Or do they want to just wait until we look at this from a citywide perspective? Is that more cost effective? You know, that's something to consider for the applicant as well.
Okay, I think you've answered my question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry.
No worries.
All right.
Do we have any other council questions, or should we go to the public? Seeing no lights. I'll open it to the public, and why don't we have the applicant come forward if you'd like to be the, if you like to, you don't have to, but I'm assuming you might want to. And please state your name for the record, and we typically give people 3 minutes. If you need a little bit extra, being that you are the applicant, we'll treat you special.
Great, thank you. good evening, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Eric Cleveland. I'm the owner and the applicant of the proposed project before you tonight. A little history about the project. My wife and I bought it in February of 2014. Shortly after we bought it, we realized that the zoning was different across the street and to the north of us. At that time, we'd hired a consultant, not knowing how the process worked. They set up a meeting with then-current Mayor Tom O'Malley. He met us on site. We walked around, and at that time, I was told that the city was not willing to entertain the thought of it because the general plan had been done 12 years prior. They also had the big development of Eagle Ranch and Walmart, and that the next general plan would be starting within about 5 years. So we sat back. We waited. 5 years comes and goes. I happened to run into Tom O'Malley. I believe it was in November. I asked him where the city was with the general plan update, and he said, I don't know. Send me an email. I'll look into it. I sent him an email. I believe the email was forwarded to Director Dunsmore, yourself, Mayor, and I believe the city manager. Phil Dunsmore reached out to me. I believe it was a couple weeks later. We had a phone conversation. At that point, he was not aware that the sewer line actually went across the front of the property. I believe he was looking at the urban reserve line on the one map and said that the city probably would not entertain this because of the infrastructure needs to extend the sewer line and stuff. While we're on the phone, I said, well, no, actually the sewer line does go beyond our property by about 10 feet. So he said, we should set up a meeting and talk. We set up a meeting. He goes, yeah, it looks like a really good candidate and stuff. And I go, well, a little history. When we met with Tom O'Malley in 2014, we were told that when they did the last general plan, the city had wanted to make this zoned 1 acre minimum, but the previous owners that we'd bought the farm or the ranch from, Stolte, didn't want the rezoning. I don't know specifically why he didn't, My only inclination was, as you can see, that's a map prior to when we bought it. There was a lot of debris on the property. I don't know if he was concerned that he would have to be cleaning it up, but we spent over $40,000 cleaning it up, hauling off to the waste. I think we had 18 25-yard end dumps with an excavator for 3 days just getting trash because we couldn't burn it. We couldn't recycle it because of the wax that was in the boxes and stuff. So when I met with Phil Dunsmore, he talked to me about the process, said it would be a viable candidate, he thought, and that my next step was to go ahead and submit the application to try and get your approval on it. In your staff report, and I think Callie talked about the comparable lot sizes, and I'm not sure, she says the bordering properties have an average acreage of 1.5. I don't know if you look, because of the size of the property, we touched 2 to the south, 2 to the north, and 1 behind us. But then if you look at center line and ownership, all the properties owned to the center of the street, and then there's the easement designation. The 6 lots that are directly across, and 4 of them that we directly touch property lines with, are actually less than 1/2 acre each. So when you take that into account with the neighboring 9 properties, the acreage size of the average gets you down to about 1.15. Our proposal is about 1.11, so we're really close there. And it says in the staff report, therefore, it would appear that the change in land use designation and zoning would not impact compatibility with the surrounding neighborhoods. In your staff report on page 13 of 23, if yours is the same as ours, it says consideration for adding this property to the urban services area may include the following factors. General plan policies 15.3 and 15.4 call for the extension of urban services when the city has the funding and based on the capacity of infrastructure. In the staff report, it says the location, however, of the subject property on Atascadero Avenue is unique because the sewer line is already located in the road in front of the property, and the gravity feed of existing line can provide service to the location. In your general plan policy 15.1, which is not in the report, it states growth should be directed to areas where services can be provided in a cost-effective manner. You can't get much more cost-effective than zero, because the sewer line's already existing. So, and I'm sure you'll charge me to hook into it.
So if I could stop you for just one moment. So we're not getting into so much of this detail. It's okay. You kind of hear the direction we're going of, you know, doing a one-off, you know, comparing this to everything that we need to do in our priorities. So is there more information that you think we need to make our decision? Because all of the things you've said, it's in our staff report, we've read it, staff's told us that, so we understand that. But is there something more that you think we need to know?
Okay, as far as is staff time, I can sit here and tell you I think they've got enough staff time, or they're overworked. You can say they're overworked. I think the main ones we listen to is them. Mm-hmm. And if they're saying they can accept it right now, and, you know, I started this knowing that I was not the high priority. What you guys have done downtown is great. I've waited 5 years. I can wait a couple extra months if things get delayed here and there. What I don't want to do is wait. And here it says another 2 to 5 years to start the process, and then they're saying a minimum of 2 years to complete the process. I could be looking at another 7. Also, when I was told no in 2014, it was because of Eagle Ranch and Walmart. Both of those didn't happen, which, if I would have known earlier, I guess I could have come to try this earlier and stuff. And with all the different projects that are going, Callie or Phil can't say, this is your number one project right now. We'll just assume Del Rio Road, okay? And it's going to take 1,000 hours of staff time. That 1,000 hours is not going to be 8 to 5 Monday through Friday for the next 3 months, because at some point, they're going to have questions. They need an architect review. They're going to have to go back to the developer. What was your intent here?
I understand.
Those are the times that I'm looking that they can work on my project. As far as precedent setting, the general plan has been amended 21 times. And yes, I'm a one-off, but there's policies and procedures to follow. I think I'm doing all those. That's what's got me up to this point. And it's based strictly on the recommendations of staff. Prior to the acknowledgement that the sewer line was in front, I was being told, no, not at this time, it's not a good candidate. So I think we, me and you, need to take recommendation of staff that this is a very unique project with a sewer and everything else. And as far as the portion on El Camino Real that you guys had talked about, even with that in place, there's still only going to be the one lot bordering the zoning change. And that lot, I happen to know, has a house, and I don't know that it would be cost-effective for them to do it based on what the value of the house is by itself, and it's not a very big lot. So,
are you complete?
That, yes.
Okay.
Unless you have any questions, thank you for your time.
I think we're good. Thank you, sir. I'd like to open it up to the public for public comment. Come to the podium, state your name, and you will have up to 3 minutes. As I see people looking around. Okay.
Stuffed animal quality, huh? Well, anyway, I, as was mentioned, I was a little bit involved with this project.
You may want to state your name just for the record
for radio
and everything.
Tom O'Malley, a citizen of Atascadero since 1950. And going back with that history, of course, my grandmother being a Stolte, and it was my cousin that had the bee farm there. No connection on property, no relationship with the property other than I knew about it, and of course know about the property, been there many times, and I think of course it was a bee farm for a number of years, and now it could possibly become for residents and residential use. Compared to the bee farm activity, probably not a traffic issue. It is unique, as staff said, with the sewer already there. I think the unfortunate situation is this has been a victim of circumstances on timing. When this was considered before, we had large projects going on. That may still be. There's been a change in council, and I know when I was new on council, I came on and we made some changes. They were good changes. I was favoring more landscape buffers between different types of development, high density versus low density, a lot of things that I think were good improvements, and you've made some good improvements through strategic planning. Unfortunately, as I was faced with, as you are faced with, there's some folks that are caught in that policy change. Unfortunate, but I learned myself that sometimes in that transition, I could delay my desire to move forward in a way that I thought was good for our city, because we're also about taking care of our residents and individuals. And I think this is a situation why we have full cost recovery on processing projects. We would expect that if we do decide to take something on, they're going to pay their fair share. And it might be a timing issue. I hope we don't go through a recession, but we've had times where there is a lull. There's some advantage to consider having this prepared that could go forward. I remember when we went through the last recession, we literally had boxes of permits that could not be processed. We, with our staff, said we're going to renew them, have them ready to go, and sure enough, when there was a recession, we were the one city with more permit processing than any other city in the county, because we planned ahead for that very contingency. So I think there's some things to consider. I also like to think that E.G. Lewis had a vision of this very size of lot. We are focused on high density. That's good. We need that. We're focused on commercial development. But we also need those lots in between where you can be self-sufficient on and raise some 4-H animals. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to address the council on this topic? No. Okay, seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion. I will say our last speaker brings up a very good point. I know the applicant came in right before a new council and before we hit strategic planning. And I also know that we have a community development department that over the years has really streamlined and worked on becoming business-friendly. And business-friendly just means really friendly to the applicant, whether you're talking a business or a resident. So we want you to be able to come in when you need something done, and maybe you don't always like the answer. You know, we can't promise that, but that we want to work with you and we want to make it as easy as possible. And so knowing them the way I do, they were probably very like, you know, hey, let's try to work with this and get this done. And then we as a council have said, hey, we've got to look at our priorities, and if it doesn't meet those priorities, we have to say no. And so our speaker brought up a very good point that Mr. Cleveland is sort of stuck in the middle of that. Because while, yes, they might have a number one priority and then be waiting for a call, they've got numbers 2, 3, 4, 5. They've got things lined up behind that. And so from my perspective, it's very important that we don't just add one more thing and one more thing and one more thing, because there can be a lot of good things that we can add, and we will drown in those good things. I think it was Jim Collins that said, good is the enemy of the great. But yet I can see how you are stuck in that in-between point where you kind of came in and, yeah, we might be able to work with this, and now we've got a new council and, you know, we're concerned with priorities. So that's kind of what we're wrestling with up here. I want the applicant to realize that, and just kind of all of you kind of wondering what we might be talking about. So I will look to the lights. Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, followed by Councilmember Newsom.
Yes, I just had a follow-on question for staff. Mr. Dunsmore, when's the last time the city took a general plan amendment request for a single or a very small number of properties?
We looked at an authorization last year for a property in Portola at Highway 41.
Right, which we declined that.
We declined, partly because it was a request to take away a commercial designation and go residential, and we felt that that property had commercial potential at some point in the future. So it was less of a processing discussion, but maybe Callie could remind me of any other times we've done. Oh, and so we did do an update about 2 years ago for the property at Halcon at Viejo Camino there for the Dennis Maresco project, where they're now starting to build the residential units there. That was a general plan amendment.
And in that case, though, there was it involved not just the property of that applicant, but several neighboring
Neighbors. It was a pretty big area, and yeah. We're talking about, you know, well, a pretty significant number of houses that could be accommodated by the update.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Newsom.
So I kind of concerned about using our resources effectively, and I know that our staff is able to manage their schedule, but I also understand the frustration the applicant has of that he's been waiting and waiting, and no time is ever the right time. So as I look at this, I'm challenged with giving you guys one more thing to do when we know that our priorities and our focus is so spelled out right now that it is a challenge to go one way or another.
Councilmember Funk.
Yeah. No, we're all sitting in a tough spot on this one, because it is a request that has a certain basic logic to it. It's not that big a deal in the overall sense of things, that this is, you know, given the properties that are around it and the nature of those and the fact that the sewer's already there, it's probably something that in the next general plan update, it's going to end up being in that kind of allowing for more housing. And that's a logical assumption, or at least that would be considered. So the homeowner's kind of stuck here with no other remedy than to either wait for several more years or ask us to do this now, which makes me want to be sympathetic to the idea of allowing staff to consider this as time allows. But with the clear understanding that because of the priorities that the council has placed on the staff, that we need the staff to honor, that this may not make the boat for the September timeframe. It might push to March. You know, several months as opposed to several years, timeframe. But that it would have to, you know, if the applicant's comfortable with that understanding, this is something that I'm inclined to find a way to at least allow us to consider.
So I will reopen public comment if Mr. Cleveland would like to come and address that.
And I would be good with that. When I originally started this process, in my mind I was thinking a year or so, 9 months, a year, somewhere in that time frame. I wasn't aware of the time frames of general plan amendment changes, the March, September. And I was kind of amazed when they said, it's fairly easy project, we can probably have it done by September. Mm-hmm. But like I said, this meeting was actually scheduled for 2 weeks ago, and when I originally started it, they thought it was going to be 2 weeks prior to that. I understand, like I said, you guys are doing great things with the downtown, and economically that makes much more sense than this four-lot project. I just don't want to wait another 3 to 7 years. So, I mean, if you guys approve it, they work on staff time, and it doesn't get done till March, I'm good with that.
Thank you. Any other council comments, or are we looking for a motion?
Have a comment, and I think as Councilmember Funk outlined, it seems like a kind of a logical project that in and of itself would perhaps not be that controversial. But when I, because I'm a very pro property rights person, and I believe in generally allowing property owners to do things with their property, but there's always a matter of reasonable expectation. And in this situation, you know, this is bought, it is zoned what it is. It's zoned 2.5 acre minimum. And if I was in the applicant's shoes, I'd be doing what the applicant's doing. I'd be, you know, trying to get it subdivided. It makes sense for the area, a whole bunch of reasons. But we can't have a reasonable expectation that, you know, the city's going to process a one-off requirement that's, you know, to the primary benefit of that individual single property owner. And I like the staff's willingness to consider doing it. I'm not sure how you, quote, work things in, as the mayor said, because you're always going to be putting something else aside to work on that singular project. And so, I mean, I just see myself not having a big problem with this project. We'd see what the other results are of the reports and all that sort of thing when the time came. But I do have a real problem with putting this, you know, onto the staff, because ultimately it becomes some sort of a priority, whether it's, you know, seventh priority or eighth priority or whatever it is. It becomes some sort of a priority because it's a legitimate application on your desk. So for that reason, I'm tempted to shy away from it, and you know, I am concerned, however, how long it's going to be before we get to that land use element update. If it's 2 years, I would be willing to say to the applicant, well, you're just going to have to live with it, because this is going to be to the benefit of this, you know, almost exclusively this property owner. But I'm just hoping it doesn't slip to 5 years, and I don't know, you know, what's going to be the driving force behind that. That if it looks like it's going to be longer, that we would potentially reconsider that. But all things considered, at this point in time, I, you know, want to tell the staff to stay focused on the priorities that we've identified for them, and not work on an application for a single property. And I also don't think that the neighboring properties really warrant inclusion at this point, because they don't have a sewer in front of them. Mm-hmm. And so they're not great candidates for a one-off application. So I, in answer to the mayor's allusion, I'm willing to make a motion that we not accept the application at this time, but that we might consider it at a later date.
Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
It's a tough one, but yes.
Motion passes. Yeah.
It's not easy, and I think Mayor Pro Tem, you laid it out well, that property rights, we want to help, and at the same time, it's just, it could sit there on the back burner for years. So thank you, though, for coming before us and taking the time. We are going to, I can't take questions from the audience, I'm sorry, it doesn't, but next time we open for a public comment, community forum, you're welcome to come up. We are now going to move on to our support of the grant application for the Homeless Emergency Aid Program, and this will be our city manager, Rochelle Rickard.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. We'll just wait a second here while Luke brings up the presentation. The item you have before you is consideration of adopting a resolution to support the grant application by the City of Paso Robles for the San Luis Obispo County Homeless Emergency Aid Program, or the HEAP program funding. We have been talking about HEAP program funding for a number of months. If you remember, in November, we did bring a resolution before the council to declare a shelter crisis in order to be eligible for this funding. The grant applications are coming due, and this is looking for a resolution of support for one of the grant applications. There's about $500 million in state block grant program funding for the continuum of cares. For us, that is our county, countywide. The San Luis Obispo County is expected to receive about $4.8 million in total funding. As I said, it does require that all jurisdictions where a applicant may be located adopt a resolution declaring a shelter crisis for the for a project to be eligible within that jurisdiction. And in November of 2018, we did adopt that resolution. As part of that resolution, and as homelessness in general, it has been difficult for the available resources that we have here in the North County to meet the needs of the North County homeless population and the entire needs. ECHO is the only homeless shelter here in the North County. Paso Cares does provide some warming shelters, and we did have TFS provide a warming shelter this year, but as a permanent or all-year-round shelter, ECHO would be the only one. It is 50 beds, and it does require that their clients meet some established criteria to receive services. They do need to be working to get out of homelessness, work with a case manager. There is a limitation on the amount of time that they can spend at ECHO and other things. As we've talked about at more than one council meeting, there is transitional food and shelter. They had approached the city to use the Armory as a warming shelter this year. That didn't work out, but luckily they were able to find another location to provide those services, thanks to a lot of work by the individual council members and obviously their board. And Paso Cares does have a warming shelter. As part of this HEAP funding, in order to provide the best services to our homeless here in the North County and to really provide an integrated continuum of care to the homeless, ECHO started meeting with the City of Paso Robles, the City of Atascadero, and various other providers to see if we could develop a coordinated, integrated approach to providing the homeless services to the entire North County region. And as such, the City of Paso Robles is taking the lead on an application in partnership with ECHO to develop a one HEAP grant funding application for both the City of Paso Robles and for ECHO. The idea is that the City of Paso Robles would provide a low barrier, no barrier shelter for the North County homeless population. It would be a 36-bed warming shelter with year-round showers, meals, case management. The case management would be provided in conjunction with ECHO, a lot of support from ECHO as they have existing rules, regulations, personnel rules, structure to help give that warming shelter structure. I think 36 beds is where we would estimate the phase one would be. We would be looking to expand that, and we would be looking for it to be a shelter to serve all of the homeless, particularly here in the North County. It would have improved access to case management, expansion of coordinated entry services. The idea is that hopefully we can move some of those that are unwilling or unable to qualify for ECHO services to a point that they could qualify and would move over to ECHO. So this would be a low barrier, no barrier. Once they are ready and working with the case management and want and desire to move into the ECHO program, it would then move forward with that. And it would provide emergency assistance and transitions to housing. The City of El Paso, as I said, is applying for the HEAP funding. And in addition to that, this HEAP grant application has rehabilitation costs for the ECHO facility. ECHO has been working with city staff on looking to see if they can expand from 50 to 60 beds. We're not deciding on that tonight, but that would be part of this application. They also have been working with staff on changing some of their operations agreements and some of those. Again, those will be coming to council in the future. We're not deciding on those tonight, but looking at seeing if they can become a 24/7 shelter or have the ability to operate more hours. And ECHO is also looking for additional counseling services. So the goal of the agencies, Atascadero, Paso Robles, and ECHO, is to improve access to housing and supported services for the entire North County homeless population. And obviously, I was talking with Wendy Lewis, who is here. She's the CEO of ECHO. There will be, people that we serve that are from the South County and the people that the South County serves that are from the North County, depending on what works best for the individuals. But primarily, we're looking to serve the entire North County homeless population. We believe that this application has the combined resources and expertise to provide the best solution and has a great deal of potential and the greatest potential to meet the needs of the largest number of individuals. This also, what they're looking for as part of that grant application is, do these applicants have the support of the local jurisdictions? This application obviously would be supported by the City of Paso Robles, the City of Atascadero, and ECHO, along with some other agencies. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. And as I said, Wendy Lewis from ECHO is here, and she probably has a lot more details than I do. Thank you.
Thank you, Rochelle. And again, just to reiterate, we're not deciding tonight should ECHO expand or anything like that. We're simply saying, do we as a council want to go ahead with a resolution and say that we support this joint application with the City of Paso and ECHO for this grant funding so that Paso can build that warming shelter. We can look at expanding ECHO. So that would be down the line, and there will be a whole process that goes with that. Tonight is, do we support that? And I know I've reported out that I've been in conversations, multiple conversations with both Mayor Martin and Mayor Pro Tem Steve Gregory, as well as Wendy Lewis. And so just, if I'm to be honest, I'm very in favor of this. So I need to be very forthcoming with that. And certainly I'm open to what I hear tonight. I've received no feedback that would be negative prior to this point, but anything you have to share with me, I'm certainly open to hearing. With that, do we have any council questions of staff? Looks like Councilmember Funk.
Yes. First of all, in the presentation, you described 36 beds and referred to it as phase one. Does that mean that 36 beds is not the ceiling of the capacity, but is an initial capacity that might be expanded should the need arise.
That is my understanding. With the available funding, with the fierce competition within the county for that funding, it was felt that we would start with 36 beds and adjust from there. The site that that City of Paso Robles is looking at to house this shelter would be able to accommodate more than 36 beds in the future.
Okay. Is the expectation that this could be up and running in time for the winter season in 2019, so by November or so of 2019?
That is the intent of the City of Paso Robles, and I believe ECHO. I will be honest. We are not sure when the funding will arrive. We're not sure if you can spend the funding before it arrives and get reimbursed. There are still a lot of unknowns about this grant. We have met with TFS to see if they would be willing to look for a contingency plan for next winter on the chance that this doesn't get up and running. But you do have a lot of dedicated people that are very anxious to get this going. And so they, right now, they're very optimistic, and they're stating that they think that it'll be up by next fall, early winter. I'm more of the pessimist, so we want to support that, and we want to keep them driving, but it's always good to have a contingency plan.
Sure. And if we support this resolution tonight, that wouldn't preclude having a contingency plan for some kind of sheltering in both
not.
Communities until the new place is up and running. If we're talking about something, is there a commitment that this shelter will serve people, residents of both, unhoused residents of both Atascadero and Paso Robles?
It is. There is a commitment that this will be a homeless shelter. We're still trying to figure out with the grant if there's any ability to give North County homeless residents more of a priority than others. There may be some restrictions against that, but certainly this will serve a lot of homeless here in the North County.
Okay, and if it is going to then be serving Atascadero, and for us to support it that way, there would need to be transportation as part of this. Has that been discussed, and how does that fold into this process?
It has certainly been discussed. I am going to defer to Wendy. She was going to make sure that it was in the grant. There are a lot of options for transportation, but transportation is a key part of any to truly make it integrated. There'll be people from ECHO that need to get Paso, people from Paso that need to get to Atascadero, and so that transportation will be a part of whatever we do.
Sure. And then last, as I look at homelessness services, and you refer to this as a continuum of care, we've focused here on two aspects of that continuum, the transitional shelter, moving people into permanent housing, and the low to no barrier shelter for those who are not ready for that. But there's also a third leg of that. If you think of this as like a three-legged stool, we have people who have medical needs who may need to be addressed, whose medical needs, particularly immediately post-hospitalization, who need to be cared for in some setting with more support. And I'm wondering if the intent is for the additional capacity at ECHO to be able to handle people who do not otherwise meet the criteria for ECHO but need a more structured situation for supervision, or if that is going to continue to be relied by other community partners to deliver that aspect of the three-legged stool.
So I will certainly let ECHO speak for themselves, but I will tell you that it is my understanding that ECHO, the expansion of ECHO, is to provide the same types of services, the same program that has been run so successfully at ECHO for a number of years and basically to stay in there. And whether there's opportunities to expand into different areas in the future, I am unsure. I know that there are conversations going on between ECHO, the City of Paso, and Transitional Food and Shelter regarding those that are medically fragile or in recuperative care and how to best serve those individuals. And it could be a transitional food and shelter or some other method, but that certainly that portion of the population is not being forgotten.
I'm good. Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Actually, I did have a question, but I was wondering if Ms. Lewis is intending to speak at all, because I could hold my questions until she's done, and in fact, they might be better questions for her.
Why don't we do that? All right. Any other council questions?
I'm just looking for Wendy to speak to how she feels that this collaboration is going to work.
Wonderful. Well, I will open it up to public comment, and we would love Ms. Lewis to come forward. And then the rest of you.
So you want to ask the question first, or do you want me
so
to
just
go ahead and say what you were going to say
name
first?
Wendy Lewis, CEO of ECHO Homeless Shelter. So one, can I make one point to just a couple things in the presentation Susan's question, or Councilwoman's question, the 10-bed expansion would also be tied to our hopes to go 24/7. So currently, we're not able to offer recuperative care to the medically fragile because we have to have all of our residents leave at 9. So the 24/7 component would be a part of that, and at least potentially 6 of the additional beds would be for that recuperative care. We've had multiple conversations with the local hospitals and SenCal Health about possible funding for that ability for us to do that as well. So the beds would come physically through the grant, but the ongoing funding would come from that stream.
Actually, that prompts a question because, I mean, TFS currently provides shelter for medically fragile people released from the hospital, and I didn't realize you want to get into that business as well.
It's not dipping into that business. It's the need is so great. It would be filling a piece that they potentially wouldn't be able to. So from my understanding, again, I don't want to speak for TFS, but they are still looking to support that type of, with that type of resource. We would just be expanding the amount of beds available. We, as an agency, get calls daily from the hospitals with folks that need a place to go, and currently it's very limited in our community, especially in North County.
Right. And then my original question, I think you already addressed it. It was alluded to, but I don't think it was stated clearly, that this joint proposal that goes forward from the City of Paso and yourself, and I think Paso Cares is involved, explicitly includes some physical improvements to ECHO, correct? And some service level improvements?
It is. It's. We're still working out the numbers, but it'll be between, our portion will be between a $300,000 and $500,000 ask out of the total $1.7 million from the proposal. So when we looked at how to have the most effective ask coming from the North County region, because the grant is very competitive, we looked at the population that the North County has, and basically we're asking for the proportionate amount of the total. So we feel like it's a very strong collective, collaborative ask, and that's what the county is hoping to have. It's hoping to have systems in place where we are working in a streamlined system, all communicating together. Each person might be doing a different part, but that we're working together as a North County region continuum of care.
Thank you.
And Councilmember Newsom, did you have questions?
No, that addressed how you guys are going to come together.
Thank you. How it's going?
Yeah.
It's going really great. Actually, I mean, it's a very fast process. So the RFP literally came out about 3 weeks ago. So we had some conversations before that, but there were many unknowns until we saw that. So we are working very closely with the City of Paso, with our city, and I can say nothing but great things about everybody in that process. Our folks and their folks have been wonderful and just really having conversations together, which is really refreshing, and it's been really helpful in the process.
Mm-hmm. Council Member Funk, it looks like you have another question.
Yes. In just in terms of capacity planning, is how many nights a year is Echo? Does Echo have additional beds available?
I would say probably, depending on the season, it's really, it's kind of an up and down flow, and there isn't a predictability of it. So right now, with a lot of the bad weather, you would think we'd be full every night, but depending on kind of the availability, if we have two beds in the family side, but we have a family of six, unfortunately we can't take them in there. And then this past summer, we were full almost every night, which you would think in the better weather. So it's really just an unpredictable population. But with the additional beds, especially with the recuperative care piece, we could meet a gap that's missing or a missing piece in our region.
Mm-hmm. And in the partnership as you're working forward with PASO, has consideration been given to having safe parking at one facility or the or both facilities so that there's as a capacity overflow measure?
Yeah, at first the plan was this big or very big, and we had to have conversations on the reality of our proposal. You know, we didn't want to go from zero, at least in Paso. You know, they're providing services, but it's going from limited resources to a new resource stream, and so we had some conversations to make sure that there was phased in. So the first ask is a really realistic ask, adding beds, adding systems, and then next steps would be safe parking. They were even talking about some transitional housing using tiny homes and some other different ideas, but those would be phase two and phase three.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anything else that you wanted to tell us? Oh, and it does look like Councilmember Newsom.
Sorry, I'm full of it tonight. My question is, I've encountered a lot of homeless people that are choosing to sleep in places that can accommodate their animals or their support pets that they have with them. I know that gets into the minute details of how this plan's going to work, but are you taking that into consideration of being able to get a few more people off the street because they have pets?
That's something that comes up almost daily. We actually, because of our where we're located, we currently couldn't offer an ability to provide a kennel or pets, but that is something where it is that person's family member, and they'll come to us for services, but unfortunately they can't stay with us. They're able to get a meal and a shower. I couldn't speak for Paso on that, but the location that they're looking at, it would be the land would be donated to from Paso to the project, and the land, in my opinion, would be very much suitable for having some sort of kennel opportunity. I just can't speak on their behalf, but it would make sense for the project and for a lot of the population that we're trying to reach, which is the more chronic, many with pets. It would really be kind of an ideal way to kind of bridge them into receiving resources.
And I'll say I did see the kennel in the proposal, and I don't know if it's in phase one or if it's a further phase, but there's definitely talking about that in Paso. Yeah. Is there anything else that you wanted to tell us?
No, just want to really thank you all for the support in looking at this. And North County, I haven't been necessarily in homeless services. This is my first year in this realm. But in the world I worked in before, we kind of bridged conversations, were part of conversations. And it's so refreshing to see the collective looking at this versus the different parts. So I'm thankful for that for all of you guys.
Thank you. We're very grateful for you in this process. Yeah. So it's open for public comment. Is there anyone else wishing to speak on this item? Please state your name for the record.
Citizen Tom O'Malley. We've come a long way since I retired as administrator at County Mental Health, used to be a marriage and family therapist. We at one time had a half-time therapist who was the homeless coordinator for the entire county, half-time. And I've seen Echo grow over the years. I do want to commend them. We're very fortunate. I think just listening to the questions you've had and her answers, I always think of the phrase, she's anticipated your needs before you knew you had them. And that's really, I think, what ECHO has done, and they've done a great job. It's probably one of the lowest cost programs in the nation, if you look per capita, but they've done a lot of good things. I also want to commend your city manager and your police chief. All of your staff have really worked closely with the private nonprofit organizations, and I think that's why we're doing better than we are. I want to especially thank our mayor, Ms. Moreno, and Mayor Martin in Paso. These two have gotten together outside of what you see here on TV, put a lot of hours into to working on this, and they've wisely involved their mayor pro tems, Charles Prebeau and also Steve Gregory, who are both involved with the homeless outreach programs, and I think have really made a difference for our North County. I also want to recognize that I think you identified the key things from a big picture standpoint. I think focusing on coordinated, integrated continuum of care is what you need to deal with these complex problems. And I think you can have confidence in the organization you've put together and the organizations that they are working with, especially ECHO. I do think both cities may need to think about contingencies because this is an important need. You've got a great strategy for meeting it, but I don't think we want to hit another winter and it didn't quite come together. And just in case it doesn't, I think you have to give some thought to that, and it may be each city preparing for that and having a plan B. And I think there'd be plenty in the community that would support that. I think you might, as I'm sure you've already considered, looking at with the Regional Transportation Authority. They're in the business to provide transportation for low income and special needs. And there is some funding. It's another organization to work with, Jeff Straw, the executive director down there. I'm sure Heather's on top of that already. But I think looking at those other components that we may need to involve other partners with, I think, is a good strategy. But I just want to commend all of the folks that have worked on this. I think you've done a very good job, and I think you'd have great confidence going forward on this decision.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? We see people very in favor. Wendy Lewis, you are absolutely welcome to come back.
Thanks. One more piece that I forgot to mention was we do have a letter of support from Transitions Mental Health. Mental health resources will be a big piece of this puzzle. And coming on board in the next few months, there will be a mobile mental health van with actually 3 to 4 people providing services out of that van, and this would be a location for them to bring resources to, and we already have commitment from TEMA, Transitions Mental Health, for that piece of it.
Fabulous. Thank you. Very good to hear. Anyone else wishing to speak? Good evening.
Jake White, Atascadero United Methodist Church. This church is in support of it.
Thank you. We're still, yes, we like brief comments. Never bad. All right.
I'll join the bandwagon. I'm Heather Branton, pastor at Community Church of Atascadero and resident of Atascadero. Homelessness has a myriad of causes, and there are a myriad of factors in how people end up not having their homes. Oftentimes, they have jobs and don't have homes, even. And that it is so heartwarming to see that cities are working together with nonprofit agencies to be able to try to address some of the issues. And so I'm sure I represent Community Church in saying we also are for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak? Well, seeing none, we will close public comment and bring it back to council for, I would think, a motion. Maybe a question from Council Member Funk?
First, I believe the city manager has something, is signaling a question or comment.
I did get a request from the city of Paso Robles to amend the third whereas to make it just slightly more general. Right now, it talks about being operated by Paso Cares. This is happening very quickly. They want to have the flexibility that if Paso Cares is not the main operator, that they can do that. So they would, if we could read, whereas the City of Paso Robles, in partnership with ECHO, is applying for Homeless Emergency Aid Program grant funding in order to help address the needs of the North County homeless population by opening a low-barrier warming feeding shelter at a location to be provided by the City of Atascadero.
That's just fine.
City of Atascadero or City of Paso Robles?
No, it would simply remove Paso Cares. Yes. So whereas the City of Paso Robles, in partnership with ECHO, is applying for, and then it would all continue, correct?
Yes. I think I did read by the City of Atascadero, too long working here, by the City of Paso Robles.
I was just
provided
clarifying.
By the City of Paso Robles, yes.
Okay, that's no problem. Did you have any questions? Or was that you were alerting me to?
Yes, I did have a comment, just that I, in my last meeting prior to the on the side that former Mayor O'Malley now sits on, we swapped seats here. The last time on that side of the dais, it was party to a very difficult council decision regarding location of the Warnings Center for this year, and this represents such enormous progress for our communities in our region in addressing the needs of this this portion of our community. I would be honored to offer the motion to approve the resolution as amended with the deletion of the words "and the Paso Cares organization" in the third whereas from the bottom.
Excellent, and I would like to second that motion. Roll call, please.
Really quick, can I just double check on...
No. As long as it's real quick, Laura.
On that whereas, are we taking out that little bracket for the operation? It also mentions
Paso Cares. The to be operated by Paso Cares.
Is that going out?
Yes.
So it'll just...
So there's the two references to Paso Cares would be deleted.
So in that third whereas from the bottom on page 22 of 23...
Right.
Both Paso Cares references are removed.
Correct.
Okay, but to be clear then, is it going to state that it's going to be operated in conjunction with ECHO? Or
yes.
Or are you going to take that whole parenthetic? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, that does add more flexibility. Does that answer your question, Laura?
That's perfect.
Wonderful.
Okay.
So we have a first by Councilmember Funk and a second by Mayor Moreno.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Happily, yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Are now on to council announcements and committee reports, and this is where any of us might tell you about something we've been involved in the community that we think is important for you to know, or also the committee reports of the different organizations that we serve on. So I will start and go from my right to my left.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Moreno. I attended a meeting of the League of California Cities, a dinner meeting for our region last Friday. Carpooled with Councilmember Sheila Blake from Pismo Beach. And at that discussion, we heard from Monique Limone, Assembly Member, and the feedback from that is that housing continues to be an area of great interest, and we should definitely look for significant legislation to move this year. And there are several other priorities. I did not look particularly optimistic for anything in terms of pension relief. That situation is likely to stay with us for another year as is. I made a pitch at the end of the session to the assembled group looking for other cities who are dealing with an issue that we have identified here in Atascadero with the alcohol and beverage control. where basically the regulatory language says that they can't add a new liquor license or transfer of a liquor license to a new property if it is without certain restrictions, if it is within 100 feet in any direction of a residence, and unless it would be determined not to inhibit the residents' quiet enjoyment of their properties. And the fundamental issue is for people living downtown, quiet enjoyment is not the attraction. The attraction is to be there with some life. And the practical effect of the way this is being interpreted in our downtown affects the ability of the restaurants and entertainment venues that we want to have serving alcohol to be functional and profitable and have services when we want them to be open. So we are looking to, we're working on a solution to that that might be regulatory, might be legislative, and we're looking to find other communities that are in that boat and to work with our local business community to be able to serve the residents the way the city has, the way we've set the priorities for the downtown area of our community.
Did we have any update on if we were added to Senator Weiner's bill? I don't know if, did we have an update on that?
Currently, we've not been added to Senator Weiner's bill because it's not amending the right portions of things. Senator Assemblymember Cunningham looked at introducing legislation separately, deferred that for now due to some concerns with the draft language that ABC had raised. So we're looking to do this as a friendly, cooperative approach with ABC and not to, you know, bigfoot them. And it's still in process.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think Assemblyman Cunningham was really trying hard to help with that, and ABC basically said, this as written, we will oppose it, and in which case it really wouldn't have gone anywhere. So thank you for continuing to work on that and seek out support. Let's see. I had the countywide mayor's meeting last week. Dave Mullinax from League of California Cities was there. Let us know that almost 2,700 bills entered entered in on at the end of February there, which is really a significant number. More than 200 had to do with housing, and he said a good 1,500 to 1,600 will affect local jurisdictions. So we've got a lot to dig into, and they're just being looked at, so we don't have that really fleshed out in terms of what the ramifications could be. Another conversation we had was just with regards to IWMA, and I'm sure our Mayor Pro Tem will have some things to say about that, but Mayor Lee from Grover Beach, who is part of IWMA, really talking about the decision of, you know, does IWMA stay as an independent body? Does it maybe go under the county? And so they're looking at some of that, and I think if that decision does come about, we'd probably want to be able to speak into that. So that's just, I think, something that is much bigger than just a reporting out right now, but wanted to give you that heads up. For SLOCOG, the EIR is out for the Regional Transportation Plan 2019, and that's about it right now.
Thank you, Mayor. In fact, yes, I was specifically going to mention the Integrated Waste Management Authority, where I represent the city. At our last meeting, the issue was brought up, and it is on tomorrow's agenda to discuss whether or not it would be more efficient for the IWMA staff, while still responsive to the IWMA board, whether it would be more efficient for them to operate under the County Public Works Department. And there's a number of reasons for that discussion, but it, of course, brings about several concerns that I think cities would want to weigh in on. One would be, you know, a loss, to what extent would that entail a loss of control, et cetera. So I'll definitely be asking a lot of questions, as you know I always do, and but I certainly hope there'd be a chance to come back to the cities and discuss the merits of that or the demerits of that before any decision was made. But that will be an issue on the IWMA agenda tomorrow. So that was one thing. The other thing is last Thursday evening I went to a meeting on behalf of the mayor, who was at another meeting, but I went to a meeting with a couple of other, three other mayors within the county, with Monterey Bay Community Power, which is a community choice energy program, which cities of San Luis Obispo and Morro Bay have signed up to, along with about 20 other cities in the three counties north of us, Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito, and where they've signed up almost all of the cities in those three counties. The following morning, our city manager went to a city manager meeting where this was discussed, and the Monterey Bay Community Power folks were there. And so I think the staff will be tracking this, and that in a few months, as we see what some of the other cities do, that staff, city manager will probably come to us with a report. I mean, I'd like her to track that, what the other cities are doing, and look into it a little more and be able to perhaps bring it back to council in 2-3 months or so. I don't know if you have a comment on that when we're all done with this.
But it kind of sounds like you're giving direction for
people
to do something and bring back a staff
asking,
report.
Well, I'm kind of suggesting that staff's already, it's being brought to them by others, so they're looking at it a little bit, but I would like to suggest that they follow what the other cities are doing and then perhaps come back to us with as an item to discuss in the future.
So I think what we can really say is you'll be tracking the other cities as you normally do and let us know what's happening. And if at some point a majority of us decides that we want that to be on an agenda, then we would so do that. All right. Thank you. Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. City of Atascadero Design Review Committee met last week. We looked at the conceptual design for Guest House Grill. It's getting a facelift up front. So that was very exciting, thanks to Phil. So that was our meeting last week. The meeting that is scheduled for tomorrow has been canceled. So I don't know what exciting concepts they have for us down the pipeline. I would like to talk about the soft, cuddly, fuzzy red pandas. I, too, have two stuffed animals at home, a baby one and a mama one. It was a very exciting exhibit. I can't say how thrilled I was that our zoo is having a display of that magnitude and the time, devotion, and love that went into it. So I was very excited to be a part of the ribbon cutting along with Charles and our mayor. So thank you.
Thank you. And I did fail to mention, I went into my committee reports and forgot sort of announcements. I wanted to say we did have the 37th annual Ladies Conference this last weekend, which was held at Colony Park Community Center. Over like close to 400 women, most of them locally within the county, but we even have some coming from outside the county, a group of women that have just, and Marlene Lutz in particular, who for 37 years has worked on this. So it was a great conference. I was honored to be MC for the fifth year, and just brings a lot of energy to the city, and good to have them here. And then just want to announce that next week is the 10th annual Dancing with Our Stars for any of those of you who've been under a rock and you don't know that. And we have three of us in this city who are actually competing this year. Our deputy city manager in charge of promotions, Terry Banish, is dancing for the library. Council member Funk is dancing for Atascadero AAUW. And I am also dancing, honored to be dancing for the library. So we're all really excited. I know there are still some tickets left for opening night, which is Thursday. So there it is on them. So go get your tickets if you haven't yet. It'll be a lot of fun. And I don't think we have any other announcements, individual determinations. All right, we are adjourned.